smarte sparetips hos Kiwi.
Her et iskaldt sparetips. First Price is garanterte friskunder I Kiwi.
Ja, nå får du 16-pack First Price saftis til 32,90 og 15-pack First Price småismix til 79,90. Og mange andre smarte sparetips hos Kiwi.
Welcome to an all-English Jernverket special on the occasion of the Inferno Festival and our live podcast with Sirenus from Dimmeborger. My name is Helle Stenklöv. Here it is. Hello and welcome to Jernverket live podcast. My name is Helle Stenklöv and I have a very important guest with me today. Give a big applause to Sirenus from Dimmeborger.
Nice to be here.
So, Jernverket is the official podcast of the Inferno Festival. If you want to listen to this episode later on, hopefully the recording will turn out just fine and you can hear it again by subscribing to Jernverket podcast. And of course, older episodes, but this is not going to be all about Jernverket. It's about you, Sirenus, and Dimmeborger. How are you today?
I'm feeling good. Thank you.
How did the sound check go?
It really sucked for me, but sometimes it just like that.
That sounds bad for tonight.
No, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine.
Let's hope so. So let's just start at the beginning. I heard you started quite early with playing the bass, actually.
Yeah, I guess I was about like 12, 13, 13 maybe. I got asked by a couple of friends of mine. They wanted someone to step in on for a local rock concert. So they just asked me, can you play the bass? No? Well, we'll tell you how to do it, show you how to do it. So that's how it started.
But you didn't play bass that long. You turned over to the guitar later on.
I think I was like 15-ish. I started with the guitar because I thought bass, it wasn't boring, but it kept me from being more creative, I think. So that's how I found the guitar way more interesting.
So what guitar players inspired you at that time at 15 years old?
Well, you know, the usual legends like the Priest guys, the Maiden guys. I also think Chris Holmes is very underrated, or at least was in the 80s. Yeah, there's tons of great players at the time. So I was very influenced by, you know, regular heavy metal. And then it turned more into extreme music, and from there to death and black metal.
When did you take the extreme turn? When did you start being interested in extreme metal?
Well, I think it was when I first heard Leprosy with Death. I ordered that on a cassette tape back in 88. And at first I didn't like it because I thought it was, you know, I felt it was too extreme. But the more and more I got into it, it was just a new world opening up, you know. So from there on, then never looked back since.
And you just decided to start your own band too, eventually.
Yeah, after I stopped playing the bass and started noodling on the guitar, making some riffs and some songs. And I had a band at the time called Malefic that we did a few covers and a few originals and played a few local shows. And yeah, that's how some of the first ideas for the demo songs started developing, yeah.
Oh, already? Did you use any of those ideas?
Yeah, quite a few, actually, on the first album. But they turned more into proper songs, if you want to call it like that. So, yeah.
The definition of a proper song, who knows? But 26 years ago, you actually created a piece of Norwegian history because Dimmeborger was formed.
Yes, obviously I didn't do that alone. Shagrat and me and Chudal, we were the three guys that got together first and started jamming, cover songs mostly. And Yeah, and then we just found that we were on the same frequency and started developing some own ideas. And we didn't really have a specific plan or a specific way to make the songs. We just went along with it, and that's pretty much what we do to this day. We keep what we think sounds cool, and what we don't really get a kick out of, we just save for later, or we just scrap it all together.
But at that time, you didn't necessarily play the instruments you do today. I know you did some vocals, and Shagrat also did lots of different things. He was on drums, too.
Yeah, he started first jamming on the drums. I did the vocals and the guitar, and Shulav also did the guitar. But after a while, we figured out that Shagrat is a much better vocalist than I am, and Shulav is a better drummer than he was, so it was like... it's pretty easy.
How did you discover that?
By accident? No. that was something that we felt that if we're going to take it to the next level, that's where our specific talents were, I guess.
But tell us about your first albums, like the first EP and then the Stormblåst of 96.
Well, the first EP, that was basically part of what were supposed to be a demo recording, which we sent out to a few small labels. We were tape trading a lot back in those days. And this Dutch company wanted to release a 7-inch, and that's how the first thing got together, really. And we had recorded some more songs for that session, and we were going to shop that around as a demo kind of thing. But then a German label wanted to release it as an album. So we went back into the studio and recorded a few more songs with a different technician. And that's why For All Tid is sounding so different from... it's recorded in two parts, so...
And at this time, you also made your own merch, flyers. The record company wasn't all about just throwing out the merch out there. You had to do that yourself.
Yeah, we had to do it ourselves. We were our own merch company and record company, basically, promoting everything ourselves, printed tons and tons of flyers, spent all our money on the band. It was everything.
Did you already then have a feeling that Dimmu Borgir would work out? Because you've never had a plan B.
No, and I think that's partly, or probably the major reason why we're still here, that we don't have a plan B. Because if you have a plan B somewhere in your subconscious, it's going to tell you that, okay, if it doesn't work out, you can lean on this, But we never did that. So I think that's why we... there's no choice. We're doing our thing and still do. So I think that's our most valuable asset.
And in 97, it really started looking good for Dimmu. You came with the Enter on Darkness Triumphant album, and you got signed to a larger record company, and people were starting to discover Dimmu. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, I guess we sold out, right?
You're not true.
No, we got... actually, before that, we got contacted by Nuclear Blast because of the Devil's Path mini CD. Marcus, the owner, he really loved that. And so we got basically signed on the basis of the Devil's Path mini CD. Things were changing a lot at the time. We still made the songs the way we did on the first albums, but we went to Peter Techgren's Abyss Studios in Sweden. And when we got to his studio, he was really kind of reluctant at first, actually, because he had heard the Stormblåst album and he didn't like it. He hated the sound, he hated pretty much everything about it. And then he told us to our face, I don't think it sounds cool. But once we started recording the songs from the Enthroned album, then he got a different view on it, and it was, as far as I remember, really an easy recording to do because everything was flowing really naturally, and of course a lot of experimenting because it was a proper studio for us for the first time, I would say, and a producer that was into metal and extreme metal and had that background, so that was extremely helpful as well.
So finally, TechGren was okay with what you did.
Yeah, we went back there and did a mini CD, Gullah Savage Garden, the next summer, and we also recorded Spiritual Black Dimensions with Peter, and so we were on the same wavelength, I would say, and so yeah, it's we made some really great records, I think. I still think they stand the test of time. Of course, when you look back at it, you can always say that, oh, you could have done this and that or whatever, but you know, it's done. So if you dwell too long on it, then yeah.
But did you at all reflect at that time about how the crowd would like the use of clean vocals, more symphonic elements, or did you just jump into it?
Actually, we don't really think like that. I don't think many bands do at all, really, because you are so immersed in your own world, in your own bubble, and you're so into your own heart that it's hard to look at it from an objective point of view. You know, it's easier to do that once the album is released and it's been out for a year or two. You know, then it's easier to see it from a new perspective, but not when you're in the middle of it. Then it's you just have to go for it, you know.
And that brings me back to your comment about selling out. Not a good thing in black metal, you know. But Dimmu Borgir has become a really big love-hate band. Either you adore Dimmu Borgir or you're on the total opposite side. How does this affect you?
That's perfect, because you get, it's a win-win situation, you know. The people that love your music and the people that hate you, they promote the band name just as much. So it's like, what can you do? Say thank you, you know.
But what is your opinion in what is true black metal to you?
To me, true black metal or true music in general is atmosphere. It's obviously now, since I'm past 40, I don't label things as much as I did when I was 16. So it's more about, you know, either I like it and it gives me something, or it doesn't, and I just move on. So it's I don't spend time and energy on listening or thinking about stuff that I don't like or that doesn't give me anything.
But why do you think other people do this? Why is it so important to be in charge of what's real or not for some of the fans?
Like, you know what? That's the best question I've ever got. Honestly.
I wish I knew the answer.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah.
Yeah, just the thing about being angry.
You know what? I had a theory that it could be something like, you know, football players changing team, and you are really close to your favorite team, and then suddenly the football player that changes to the different team, he's suddenly a Judas, you know, because he's not yours anymore, and you're attached to something. I think that's where the most of it is. Yeah.
But maybe it's something that's connected to age too, and to maturing, because
I'm not so sure about that.
I can only speak for myself,
right,
but yeah. I remember the first time I met you guys. That was in 2003 with the death cult Armageddon and the signing session, and I was really eager to see how cool and true Dimmu Borgir were, and I was sitting there in the line and waiting for my signature. And I saw you guys in like normal clothing, and you were kidding around and having fun and making jokes about stealing the cash register at Rockin. And I was like...
Not good for business. Not good for the image.
And I was like, what? These guys are like, funny and having a good time. This doesn't add up with the black metal image at all. But then I grew up.
Yeah, we did too. I think.
Yeah, so, but you've done a lot of different things throughout the years. As you also brought in the symphonic elements, you got bigger and bigger around the world, but also in Norway as an export article that the media loves to call Dimmeborgir and black metal. And this led you to work with symphonic orchestras. How does this even happen?
Well, obviously our music has grown into a certain way that the difference between using keyboards and a real live orchestra is not that big. So for us to finally be able to record with orchestras and real choirs, of course, which is a huge ingredient in our music, that was something that was a dream come true, basically. Also, especially when an orchestra like Cork is asking us if we want to do something with them and not the other way around. That, to me, speaks volumes. So, of course, when an opportunity like that comes around, you don't dwell on it too long before you say yes. So, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the Cork cooperation? Maybe some of your foreign fans haven't heard that story.
Well, it's they contacted us about a possible collaboration for a concert. And this was when we were working on songs for the Abracadabra album. And we were actually, of course, already before that, thinking about utilizing an orchestra and... So we had a meeting about this show, and then we kind of hinted at why don't the orchestra also play on our album? So we do two and two, and that's how it all came together. And it's probably one of the most professional things that we've ever done, and it came out great. It really gives the songs what we feel that it needed, and also live, I think it shows how dynamic a band like Dimmu can be live, because on an album every band can sound perfect and tight and whatnot, but live it's where you show if you're a band or if you're not, you know. So especially when you're 100 people on the stage, also for a festival with no sound check, it's like you got to be kind of a madman to do that stuff, you know. But so far, so good.
Well, your show with Cork, that's the Norwegian Broadcasting Company's orchestra, and the choir was shown at the Oslo Spectrum, a big concert stage here in Norway, and that was broadcast on Norwegian television. That's yeah. Quite crazy.
Yeah, it's like we really got our money's worth. you might want to explain that, but no, it's it was definitely one of the bigger highlights or musical career, and I think also judging by the orchestra. Musicians and the choir and everybody involved, they also really enjoyed it a lot. You know, it's something different for them to do, and it's challenging for both bands and orchestra. So, yeah.
And that actually led to some reactions from the Christian community too. And it's kind of weird because we haven't heard much from them lately. It's small. The Norwegian Christian community is small, and they rarely shout out in the media about anything because there's so few of them. But this was satanic.
Yeah, but we sold out way before then. No, it's. I think it's important that music, honest music, obviously makes people. It can provoke people, you know, and that's totally fine. I think music should provoke, because it gives you. You have to take a stand, basically. So, and why not us? You know.
But that maybe might work in several other parts of the world today, but what do you do in Norway now to provoke at all?
Sell out.
That's the answer to everything. But let's talk about your newest album, The Aeonian, that came last year.
Yeah, almost a year ago.
Yeah, and you had a long, not break as a band, but it was almost 8 years since your last album before that.
Yeah, for us it didn't feel that long, but in hindsight, looking back at it, it's of course from the fans' perspective, it's 8 years is quite a quite a stretch. But yeah, we usually take a break after each touring cycle is done anyway, so that's pretty normal. But and we didn't really intend the so-called break to be that long, but there was also other parts behind the stage, behind the scenes that were happening that needed to be taken care of. So, and we were simultaneously working on new stuff. So it's not like we didn't work. You know, we had a lot of ideas from the Abra sessions, and I guess it was the last three years before the release of the last album that we kind of sped up the process, the writing process, and got things settled to fully songs. So once we get going, it goes pretty quick, I would say.
How do you work with songs when you start writing them? How do you form a song from the beginning to the end?
Well, actually, that hasn't really changed since the beginning, because we still do it with the same approach. We get together with our individual ideas and put it into the Dimmu pot and stir around, and whatever drips out that we would like to taste, that's what we keep, you know. So we don't really have a more specific formula than that, really.
But you never wanted to talk much about what the lyrics are about. I know that you're playing with the illusions of time at this one. Why are you so secretive on this particular?
I don't think it's about being too secretive. It's more about, since I write most of the lyrics, I don't want people to have a preconceived idea of what it is about, because it should mean something to those, at least, who are interested in the lyrical content. I want them to make up their own mind and to kind of find themselves in those words, you know, what they mean for them, not necessarily what it means for me.
Sommeren bedre med Meny, og denne uken får du blant annet 30% rabatt på et stort utvalg spekemat. Sommerkoteletter til 79,90 per kilo, 8-pakk Pepsi Max til 109 kroner, og store frosne reker til 119 kroner kiloen, både i butikk eller levert hjem. Meny, spiser du bedre, lever du bedre.
But when you look back, what is your least favorite Dimmu Borgir album since the beginning?
That's really hard to say, because there's obviously certain stuff that, you know, the circumstances with every album, and there's stuff that could have been done in a different way, which have probably made it better for us. But for the fans, it's still going to be the same. So I look upon all the stuff that we maybe should have done differently. I look upon it as more like lessons, you know, and try not to do the same things again, and trying to perfect your own vision, your own idea. So I don't know if I have a least favorite album, to be honest. It's they all have strengths and so-called weaknesses, if you want to call it like that.
But you did do Storm Blåst a second time.
That's correct. And that's several reasons for that. The main reason is actually because it wasn't available anymore. It was not in circulation. And the contract was up. And so then it comes back to us as ownership. So and we were not happy with the production and the sound, although I know a lot of fans really like it, and I totally appreciate that, and I can also understand why they like it. But we had the chance to redo the whole album, so for us that was a great thing. And now if people, now they have two versions. So if they want to stick to the old one, that's fine. If people want to listen only to the new one or both, that's fine too, you know. So we basically did it mostly for ourselves. And for those people that didn't get hold of the first version, which they probably only could get on eBay for a huge sum of money, which is not fair, so...
But being as big as Dimmu Borgir is also means that you get a lot of media attention, and not just the parts that are good and bad for selling albums, like the hate and the love, but also that quarrels might be taken out in public, like when Vortex and Mustis went out from the band. How does this affect you, that everything is happening in the public?
Well, obviously, you kind of want to avoid it to become public, but that's kind of impossible. So you kind of want to try and tone it down and not make a huge fuss about it. Obviously, changing personnel in a band is not something that we want to do. But sometimes it's just necessary, because it's either... You come to a conclusion, it's either that or the band won't be able to move forward. So it's not only about taking the easy decisions, it's also about taking the really difficult decisions.
But you've been there since the beginning, so I guess you've done something right.
Something right. Something wrong, but mostly things right, I think.
And after all these years as a touring band, you must have some good stories to share with the fans. Either they are fun ones, embarrassing ones, crazy ones. Could you give us one in the Spinal Tap landscape?
Oh, there's tons of those, but they are kind of boring. My favorite one is probably still the one... when we did the Ozfest tour in 2004, we did a live interview on a Cleveland radio, and the guy who was interviewing us, he really wanted us to talk shit about Rob Halford because he was gay, and we were sitting there and we started cursing and defending Rob, obviously, so he didn't get what he wanted, and so he threw us off the air live. And then 3 days later, we come off the stage. I think I can't remember where it was, but we came off the stage, and there was like in our dressing room, there was like 10 crates of imported English lager, and it was a yellow post-it note where it said, "Thanks for defending the metal god, Rob." So apparently he had heard about this radio funnel and thought it was cool. So, yeah.
I don't think we need any more stories than that one. But you've also done some fun things on the side of Dimmu Borgir. You even lent your voice to a cartoon.
Yeah, that was a few years ago. We have done a lot of... non-Dimmu stuff while we've been on tour or on press trips or stuff like that. Some of the stuff we maybe shouldn't have done, but it's done. So, but I think it's important to try and get your name, your band name, out there in other areas as well. Like movies, we've been in a couple of big movie trailers and stuff like that. So. I think it's fitting for our music too. So, yeah.
But if somebody asked you to star in the movie, would you say yes?
I'm not so sure if any of us are any actors in that sense. But we've tried that in our own videos, and
it's up.
Next question.
What does the audience think? This guy good in the music videos, huh? Yeah, they're nodding.
All right. Too kind.
And you also done some radio. You were in a show with Olav Viksmo Slettan, 333, the half
halfway
emo.
To hell. Yeah, yeah, that was a fun thing to do. I personally, I like to do stuff outside my main thing, which is Dimmu, of course. But I think it's very healthy to have that type of mistress on the side, you know. So it just helps to stay creative and get a broader perspective on things.
Maybe you should be my co-host in Jernverket. Yeah?
Can you afford me?
No.
Just kidding.
Any sponsors out there? But as you've been in a radio, you're probably used to giving people musical tips. If you were to go home now, either to relax or have a little party, what would you listen to?
That's a good question, because it can change from minute to minute. One morning I can put on something really old school type of black metal. The next morning I could listen to some dark reggae stuff, or I can listen to some ambient jazz or whatever. It all depends on the feeling, really. So,
please do name drop an ambient reggae band.
Well, that's going to be difficult. But in the past, I was kind of reluctant to get Spotify because of the obvious. But then I kind of caved and I started using Spotify, and that's a really helpful tool to discover new music, new bands. Doesn't matter if it's an underground band or if it's something classical or whatever. It's really cool, I think.
Just a quick message to the audience. As you can see, there's a microphone put out in the center now. In the end of this interview, it will be possible to ask questions. So if you have any, just think them out, and I'll tell you when it's okay to ask. Okay, where was I? Of course, then I lost my thread. Yeah, I already got a listener question earlier. Most of them were very internal questions, but one of them was concerning the charity bikers. Are you still involved with that, and what do you do with charity bikers?
Yeah, I'm still involved. I'm still a member, but that's separate from the band. So when I wear my colors there, then I'm a member of the club. So keep it separate.
I have a few very quick questions where you get to choose between this or that. And you have to make your answer short and fast. You ready?
Go.
Iron Maiden or Judas Priest?
Judas Priest.
Easy. Denim or leather?
Denim.
I like this guy. And if a band or someone were to cover a whole Dimmu Borgir album, would you prefer them to use the pan flute or the accordion?
The pan flute. By far.
That will be Georg Samfir on a pan flute with Dimmu Borgir. That's your next step. And that... But that also brings me to, do you have any plans for a new album? I know that you're slow workers, but are you thinking about it?
Oh, yeah. We have tons of material from leftovers from the previous one, plus that we make music every week, you know. But with us, it's the older you get and the more experienced you get, the more... how should I say it? More critical you become as well to your own stuff, and it's the challenge is never to come up with enough material. That's the easy part, but to compose it and arrange it together, that's the challenge for us. So I'm really looking forward to really dig into it and start see what direction it will take us.
Yeah, since you've been constantly evolving and doing new things for each and every album, is there something that you still think that you should do or that you want to do in the future?
Well, we have done a lot of stuff that we never thought was possible, and we have done stuff that we didn't even imagine to do. So I think it's healthy to keep our feet on the ground, you know, just like the way we did when we started the band, and not have too many crazy expectations or needs or whatever, you know. We are always going to do what we do, and in one extent or another, whether it's playing for 7 people or 70,000, it's still the same. You're going to still do the same thing.
So you think that if something would happen and Dim Borgir would fall to the bottom of the charge and nobody would come to your shows anymore, you would just still continue doing it?
Yeah, I think so, because for us, we never make music with that in mind. We make music that gives us something, and if we're not happy with it, then we know that a lot of other people are not going to be happy with it either. So it's once we are done in the studio with a new album, then we are happy. We can stand behind the product 110%, and by knowing that, we know that a lot of people is going to really love it, and a lot of people is going to really hate it. So it's a perfect mix.
As long as love and hate exists, Dim Borgir will be here.
Yeah.
That's not true either. Okay, so we should probably make some room for listener questions, if there are any. Any of you wondering? Okay, there's one. Please come to the microphone in the center here. Hey, what's your name?
Hi, my name's Patrick.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi.
If you could choose one album between the years 1989 and 1997, Norwegian black metal, non-Dim Borgir album, which one would you listen to? You touched on Atmosphere earlier on. Which one would you choose?
From 89 to?
1997. A non-Dim Borgir album.
A Blaze in the Northern Sky. Welcome.
A good one there. Thanks to Patrick. Anyone else? Yeah, please. Hey, what's your name?
Hi, Lassi from Finland.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, yeah. This question has nothing to do with the music, but how long have you grown your beard?
Like 12 years or so. It kind of stopped growing, so yeah, which is probably a good thing.
Okay, thanks.
Thought about extensions?
No. Maybe when I'm at the nursery home, you know.
Yeah, there's a gentleman in the back there.
Hey,
hi.
How are you?
Hey.
I'm Nick from Tehran, Iran, and I wanted to ask you that. Do you guys know that how big you are in Iran?
No.
But yes, you are.
Yeah.
Actually, the black metal is very big over there. So I just wanted to ask you if you know.
All right.
What was the question?
Does he know that how much black metal is big in Iran, especially?
Iran.
Yeah. Iran. Yeah.
I have. Obviously, I pay a little bit of attention, and I know there's underground scenes in most countries, so that I'm aware of, but I guess it would be quite a challenge to put on a gig.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it is.
Secret gig in Iran up next.
A different name.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Yeah, please. Hi, what's your name?
So, hi. My name is Severi, but just call me Sam.
You could just turn it down.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm so...
Yeah, you know, that's good.
Yes. So, hi.
Hi.
I would like to know, because I am very impressed by your soundtrack, Rite of the Passage. And I use your soundtrack that inspired me a lot to do my astrophotography shots, and I would like to know what crossed in your mind when you created this track, because it's so powerful, and I would like to know what makes you what was the process to write it, because you know it's so powerful, it's like really, I feel something very special in this song, and I would like to know how, what crossed in your mind when you wrote it, you know, I mean.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Because I can see the space, and I can see like something like even more beautiful after, and so on, and this kind of feelings, and I would like to know like, your feeling about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that track was basically meant to be written as an ending thing for the new album, like kind of like a story ends. We have had songs like that on the previous albums as well. Yeah. So we kind of want to do that tradition, continue that tradition. So that's the good thing about music, that it means something like that for you, while another song for someone else means something different. And that. Yeah. No, that's
like
a really nice description.
Milky Way, Milky Way and so on. So that's, you know, it's kind of a very special song for me.
That's right, beautiful.
Cool. Nice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions from the audience? Yes, please.
Hi.
Hello.
My name is Diana Blajan, and I come from Transylvania. And yes, I can hold it. Oh, okay. Yes. So, and I would like to ask you, if is there any feeling that you will play in a few months on the grounds where I come from, and if you feel something from the connection of music and Transylvania, because a lot of artists are inspired of those grounds, and I'm looking forward to discover the answer, and maybe I will search it all my life, and yeah.
Well, I think since our music and also talking about black metal and stuff in general is very picturesque type of art. So I think most artists and black metal bands in particular have a connection to Transylvania.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I wish you then to have a very nice evening tonight, and I'm sure that it will be great show in the grounds of Transylvania, where I will not be, I will not attend the concert. And yeah, that's what
Thank
it.
You. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
So are there any more questions from the audience? No? So thank you very much. Those of you that... Oh, there's one. Okay, please come to the microphone. Yeah. Okay, then... yeah, there's the microphone for you.
I'm from Ukraine. And oh, wow.
Yeah, that's Spinal Tap.
That's will be much more easier. You said that music should provoke someone. Tell us some funny, your personal fail on the stage, if any.
There's been many. Some of them I've been able to cover up, even for other band members. But I've had a few mishaps over the years. I mean, sometimes when you're young and stupid, you... You end up drinking too much alcohol, and that has put me back sometimes, a few times. I'm not going to say sometimes, a few times. And I remember specifically in, I think it was 2004, when we were on tour with Hypocrisy and Nevermore in the States, we had a double concert two nights in a row in L.A., and after the first show, which was really cool, we went out on town drinking, partying, the usual. And the next morning, we started with the pictures of Bloody Marys and margaritas and stuff like that and got really cocky and skipped the sound check. And yeah, this is going to be really cool tonight, blah, blah, blah. And then went on stage. And yeah, I can't remember too much of that show. I later learned that our... front of house technician, the sound guy, he had actually turned me all the way down because I was hardly touching my guitar at that point. So you learn from mistakes like that. Yeah.
Okay, we have time for one more quick question. Anyone? That's all. Okay. Thank you very much for your questions, and thank you for coming today.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Big applause to Silenos. And the show will be put out. I think I'll be done on Saturday, so you can hear it all over again and spread the word to your friends. Subscribe to Jernverket. It's difficult to spell that in other languages, but find all the information in the booklet. And Dimmu Borgir will be playing at Rockefeller tonight at 11:30.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for taking the time. And you have a signing session afterwards?
6:45, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So be there, people. See you later tonight. Thank you for coming. Thank you, Silenos.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You just heard a recording of a Jernverket live podcast with Silenos from Dimmu Borgir at the Inferno Festival of 2019. This podcast is usually in Norwegian, but if you subscribe, you'll find several interviews in English too, like next week's show. I found an older chat with Midnight, and that suits me well, as I'm going to Keep It True next week, where Midnight are playing.
Well, I'm a big Ted Nugent fan, because he's an asshole. But that's what I love about him. He's just such a dick. I'm not saying I agree with the guy, but...
Subscribe to Jernverket podcast through your podcast app or go to jernverket.com. It would make me very happy if you added a nice review that helps Jernverket up on the podcast lists. If you're interested in advertising through podcasts, send me a message. I'm looking for new partners and I'm eager to hear what you've got. Remember to follow Jernverket on Instagram and Facebook to get the latest news, competitions and chats. I'm Helle Stenklöv, and I'm presenting old and new hard rock interviews every Friday. See ya!
Sommeren bedre med Meny, og denne uken får du blant annet 30% rabatt på et stort utvalg spekemat. Sommerkoteletter til 79,90 per kilo, 8-pack Pepsi Max til 109 kroner, og store frosne reker til 119 kroner kiloen, både i butikk eller levert hjem. Meny, spiser du bedre, lever du bedre.